of some stranger who fucks up my skin, but since you're technically my younger brother, I can beat you and write it off as sibling love. You're the bottom of the food chain now, Ichi, and all part of learning how it is to be one of the boys. And Maddie? He crooked an eyebrow up. She one of the boys, too? Fuck no. First, you don't hit a girl, I snorted. Secondly, she can run you down like a cheetah and pound you into the ground with her purse. Don't fuck with that woman. She carries cinder blocks around just in case she has to build a wall or something. I closed the door behind my laughing brother and headed back into the living room to soak in more of the Pastafarian Ouija board I'd created. The notes Bach wrote down were sketchy. I had no idea when Yunjun had first gotten pregnant, or even when she'd come over from South Korea. Let's see. Yunjun, you were, what, 41? 40? I didn't know a lot about women, but that sounded kind of late to be having a baby. Maybe you were pregnant before but lost the first baby, and getting a kid from your husband wasn't happening? Did you go back to the guy who knocked you up before and then try to pass the baby off as Lee's? Or can Lee even have kids? Then he found out about Kyung-si and killed you? I really needed Wong to get back to me about Lee. The rut I was stuck in seemed only to get deeper and deeper the more I ran around, and I couldn't see a way out. If I kept it up, I was pretty certain I was going to be buried under a pile of maybes with no clear answer. My phone rang while I was staring at those damned red and black lines leading to Yunjun's name. Thinking it was Mike calling to yell at me for not coming with Ichiro, I let it ring a few times before picking up. It wouldn't do if Mike thought I lunged to answer the phone each time he called. That kind of thing led to a swelled ego, and his head was big enough without my help. Except that it wasn't my bossy, overbearing older brother. Instead, the male voice on the other end of the phone had a harder edge to it, something cut from violence and tightly held back emotions. I couldn't understand what he was saying. Then it kicked in that he was speaking a fast, guttural Korean I had no chance in hell of comprehending, even with my limited understanding of the language. To make matters worse, it sounded like whoever was calling was in the middle of an arcade. "Whoa, hold up," I cut him off. "Okay, first, English. Sorry, my Korean's only good for ordering off a menu. Who is this?" "Fuck, hold on. I've got to get out of this room." The chatter and beeping in the background faded, and all I could make out was the guy's breathing. "Is this the guy who came to see me? Cole McGinnis?"
"Hung Cho?"
I hadn't been around him long enough to recognize his voice, but he sounded rougher than I'd remember.
"What's up, man? I got through a lot of your grandfather's—" "I didn't call you about the goddamn papers, man."
He spat into the phone.
"I called you because someone knifed my daughter this afternoon. What I want is for you to tell me who the hell is doing this shit so I can go and return the favor. Swear to God, man. Abby dies, and I'm going to fucking kill anyone who has ever had anything to do with Kyung-si. And then I'm going to start in on his ass with a knife and see how he fucking likes it."
Chapter 19. There is no longer trip than driving to a hospital, especially when a little girl I had just met lay on a table somewhere in the building with surgeon's fingers inside her guts. I stopped on the way to pick up something to make her smile, blindly looking for something to stave off the wild dread running like a nightmare through my brain. All I could see in my mind were her tiny little flip-flops sitting on the porch, and her little hands on her father's face when she leaned in for a kiss. I parked and wondered if I needed to hit reception up to see where Abby'd been taken, but I spotted her father first, his waxen face a spot of white in front of the building's blue-gray stone blocks. Hung Chul was standing in the large cement smoking circle outside of the hospital where his daughter, Abby, fought for her life. If I'd had any doubts of his love for his little girl, they were swept away when I saw the broken young father fighting to keep his hands from shaking as he lit a cigarette. I wanted to tell him I knew how he felt, but the hard look I got through a plume of menthol smoke told me he didn't want to hear it. So I didn't say it. Instead, I pulled out a head-sized fluffy gray things with ears out of a plastic bag and handed it to him. "Here. It's for Abby. It's called a Totoro. The lady at the store in Little Tokyo said kids love it. Thought she might like one." "Thanks," Hung Chul made no move to take the toy. Instead, he took a long drag on his cigarette and stared up at the sky. Even in the orange fizz glow of the parking lot lights, I could see tears forming in his eyes. A taint of pain-filled water, and then they were gone, lost in the wispy streams. I put the Totoro back in the bag, paying close attention to fitting its body past the handles to give him a little bit of time to pull himself together. Mouse-sized moths played death tag with the lights overhead, creating fuzzy Batman symbols on the asphalt below. A few hundred feet away, the hospital's ER did a brisk business. The automatic glass doors barely had time to kiss before they were flung open again by someone hurrying in. Several scrub-wearing men and women hung at the edge of the smoking area, fatigue draining their faces to a lifeless gray. Blood and gore stained their cotton, making them look more like hapless butchers than healers. Personally, seeing how tired they all looked, I'd sooner trust them with a Q-tip than a scalpel, but the hospital had other plans for them. One detached from the pack, then another. Others came to take their places, less spattered but no less tired. Hung Chul and I were the only civilians. Almost made me want to light up just so I could fit in. As it was, Hung Chul's pulls on his cigarette seemed half-hearted at best. Nothing compared to the frantic inhale and puff assembly line next to us. "How's she doing?" I had to ask. Even if I didn't want to hear the answer, I had to ask. "Okay," Hung Chul grunted. "I guess. Fuck, no one's saying she's fantastic, but she's out of surgery. Fuck her. Nicked her liver. We've got to watch her turn fucking yellow and get sick on top of worrying she'd die." I knew nothing about the side effects of getting stabbed in the liver, but it was never a good thing when an organ got punctured. I couldn't imagine how small Abby's organs were. A knife made serious damage in an adult. I'd be surprised if Abby's insides didn't look like they'd been put through a blender. "How did it happen?" His daughter was maybe 3 feet tops. Someone would have had to squat down and stab her. It's not a motion that would go unnoticed. "Where did it happen?"
"My mom took her to one of the Korean malls. I don't know, for a purse or something."
Hung Chul's hands clenched into fists at his sides, and I took a step back. Even if Wong had told me Hung Chul was a nonviolent man, keeping out of arm's reach still seemed like a good idea.
"There's this grocery store on the first floor, and I guess they were having a huge half-off sale. My mom put her in a cart so she wouldn't get stepped on, then grabbed a bag of rice. She turned around because Abby was screaming, and that's when she saw all the blood."
"What did the cops say? Any suspects?"
"Shit, no one saw anything. There were too many people."
He sniffed and looked away. In profile, he seemed more like a lost little boy than the hardened thug Madame Sun had made him out to be. His lower lip trembled and he pulled his mouth in tight, desperately fighting to keep control of his emotions.
"Who the fuck does this to a kid? My kid!"
I'd done calls with Ben where we'd found a kid in the middle of some of the worst shit imaginable. It always amazed me how brutal people could be to children. Especially their own. Just when I thought I'd seen it all, some monster would crawl out of the pits of hell and show me a new way to carve childhood and joy out of a kid. I wouldn't want to see that dead soul film build up in Abby's innocent eyes. From the way Hung Chul chewed on the end of the cigarette, he intended to find out who'd hurt his baby girl. And God help them. He pinned me in place, his face desperate with pain.
"You think whoever killed Vivian stabbed my kid?"
"Dude, I don't know, but it's not something we can ignore." I wished I could give him some solace, but that kind of hope was too pie in the sky. "What did the cops say?"
"Fucking nothing. There's a woman cop upstairs. She's still talking to my mom."
He cleared his throat.
"It's one of the cops who came by earlier. She's the one who thought I killed Vivian. Told her what I told you, and fuck her if she thinks I did something to Abby."
"Is her name O'Byrne?" He nodded once, and belatedly I wished I'd called Bobby up so I could use him as a human shield if she started in on me. She'd caught Vivian's murder, and Hung Chul was a 1 degree of separation from that case. It made sense for her to come around to sniff out anything on the assault on Abby. Yeah, she's a bitch, but she's a hard-ass cop. Then, out of the night, I heard her voice. Well, if it isn't the man I thought I'd have to hunt down tomorrow morning. And I was pretty sure she'd just heard me call her a bitch. There really should be an international warning signal that all evil people should wear. I'd probably catch some shit about freedom of speech or some crap like that, but really, a jester hat with bells would go a long way in keeping people, mainly me, from making an ass out of themselves. At the very least, the scrubs standing between us and the door should have scattered like pigeons when a cat strolled through them, but no such luck. Plastering a pleasant look on my face, I turned and gave her a nod hello. O'Byrne? I kept it short and businesslike. Maybe I was hoping she'd hop onto the nearest broom and fly off with her monkeys, but she didn't deliver. McGinnis? She smiled, her hyena teeth turning a ghastly tangerine in the off-putting light. Good to know you hold me in such high regard, especially since I don't hold you in any. Calling them like I see them, detective. It made another attempt to hand the fat gray ball over to Hong Chul. This time he took it. The bag crinkled loudly in his fist and his knuckles turned white, pale even under the citrus glow. Finishing off the rest of his cigarette, Hong Chul let the verbal ping-pong pass over his head and put the stub out on the cement. Exhaling the last of the smoke from his lungs, he nodded at me, but gave O'Byrne one of his hard looks. It didn't look like he was any more fond of her than I was.
You done with my mom, or are you going to be harassing us some more?
The thug Madam Sun had told me about was suddenly evident in Hung Chul's furious glower. I would have stepped back, but O'Byrne was next to me. I'd have knocked her on her ass, and she'd probably shoot me in retaliation.
I'm just doing my job, Mr. Park.
O'Byrne used the patented cop-soothing voice they'd taught all of us at the academy.
If you're done here, your mother hoped you'd head back upstairs. Your daughter was beginning to wake up when I left. Fuck, and I'm not there.
Hung Chul swallowed any bile he had left in his throat, and I slapped his shoulder.
I'll talk to you later, dude. If you find out anything, you let me know, okay?
Yeah, sure. It was a lie. O'Byrne and Wong would both have my ass if I told Hung Chul I found out who stabbed his daughter first. The detective practically snarled at me when Hung Chul headed inside.
What the hell are you doing here, McGinnis?
She didn't even wait until Hung Chul cleared the doors before she turned on me.
And why are you hanging around one of my suspects?
He called me. We do yoga together. I stepped out of the bounds of the cancer-summoning circle. She dogged me, her legs long enough to match my stride. Once clear of the smoke ring, O'Byrne grabbed my arm and tugged me around. I let her. She was friends with Bobby, and I never knew when I'd need him to hit her up for some info. It didn't mean I liked it, or even wanted her to think she could push me around. O'Byrne pulled every subtle intimidation tactic we'd all been taught. She squared her shoulders and tucked her hands on her hips, pushing back her jacket and exposing her gun. I knew she wasn't doing it because she needed to prove she was one of the guys. O'Byrne didn't play the gender game. She was a cop, and probably bled blue. I bled red. I'd liked being a cop, but it hadn't been my entire life. Cops like O'Byrne cut their milk teeth on handcuffs and badges. I'd told Hong Chul the truth. She was a bitch, and would stab at me in any way she could if she thought it would get the job done, but the bottom line was O'Byrne was a damned fucking good cop. And I was glad she'd pulled Abby's case, even if she was only on the fringes of it. I looked down at her hand on my arm, and she released her hold, letting her arm drop to the side. You really think Hung Chul stabbed his kid? That's fucked up, even if you're in full paranoia.
No, I don't think he stabbed his kid. But he might know who did. I was hoping he could think of someone who was pissed off at him.
O'Byrne's frown was on me for a moment before her attention flicked over to the ambulance arriving. Something had her on edge. If I were a betting man, I'd have to say it was me.
Did he tell you anything I can use? You know, since the two of you go play frisbee together on Sunday?
No, mostly we talked about who could have done it. You got any ideas? I took her disgusted grunt as a no.
Look, if I had anything solid, I'd tell you, or maybe Wong. I'd get at least a six-pack of beer out of it from him. All I get out of you is attitude. Is this all fun and games for you, McGinnis?
She had been primed for action when she had first come downstairs, and I'd apparently tossed the lost straw on her back.
"You know, they told me you were a joke, but I thought I'd give you the benefit of the doubt. Now I see they were right."
"If you think I give a shit about what some cops say about me, then you're screwed in the head." I took a step in, pushing back on O'Byrne's personal space. She didn't flinch, facing my body full on. I kept my voice low, but it cracked under my anger.
"Madam's son came to me because the cops blew her off. I went to Wong with whatever I had because he was on the Choi case, and I'd have tried talking to Jenkins if I thought it would do any good. So don't accuse me of thinking this is a joke."
"I didn't know you'd gone to Wong before." Her eyebrows scurried together over her nose. "What for?"
"Gungjin Gyeongsi might be pulling a fake sexual therapy scam with his clients. Yun Junli was one of his clients. I think he got Yun Junli pregnant before she was murdered. Maybe even back in Seoul. I know Vivian Na and Hung Chul are both his. I don't know how Mei Choi fits into this, other than Gungjin was her maiden name. She might be related to Gyeongsi, but he says no." I ticked off everything I knew on my fingers, connecting the dots for her. "But then he plays up this campy fortune-teller gig to make himself safe for women to see him, and I only have hearsay to go on about the sex thing, so there you go. That's pretty much everything."
"I knew Sun had clients dying, but didn't know about this Gyeongsi guy. He's definitely somehow tied into this, then."
She mulled over what I said.
"If he's pretending to be gay, that's not a crime, per se. Might be fraud, but I don't think it'll hold up. Abuse of authority if someone talks about it. I'll see what Wong's got on him."
"It doesn't matter if he's gay or bi or whatever," I replied. "The point is someone's pissed off about it. Maybe he has a lover out there who's mad Gyeongsi's sleeping around, or a ticked-off husband who found out his wife got knocked up by her fortune-teller. Wong was supposed to see if Lee's husband knew she was pregnant."
"They arrested him this afternoon for her murder." O'Byrne tapped her foot. "I don't think he did it, but the captain was pushing Wong for it. He'll be bailed out, pretty sure of it. Everything against him was circumstantial."
"Jenkins did a shitty job on that case. There's no way in hell someone climbed in over the balcony to get into that apartment."
"I'd ask how you knew Jenkins put that in his initial report, but it sounds like you've got Wong in your back pocket."
She'd sneered when she said it, but I could tell her heart wasn't in it.
"No, I found that out before the case became Wong's. I didn't have to bring up how I got the information. As far as she knew, Jenkins could have told me over a bottle of vodka and a box of Krispy Kremes.
Look, I don't know what to tell you other than I'm trying to stay out of your guys' way, but I've got a case to run. Sun's the one who hired me. I work for her. She wanted to find out why her clients were dying. Now she's got a dead daughter, and there's a baby girl upstairs someone tried to put on a skewer. Well, do me a favor."
"Yeah, because, we're so close," I cut in.
"Don't be an asshole, McGinnis," she growled. "We've got a couple of witnesses who came forward to say Darren Shim was the shooter, but someone else drove the car. If Hung Chul tells you who it is, I want you to let me know. Immediately. It could be the driver's the one who stabbed Abby. This could all be a warning for Mr. Sea Dog to keep his mouth shut."
"Detective, if Hung Chul knows who was driving that car, you won't need me to tell you who it is. By tomorrow afternoon, you're going to find his body cut up and smeared all over Koreatown." The next morning, after much too little sleep, I discovered I was out of coffee. The cat had lots of food, but somehow I'd let my bean supply dwindle. Grumbling to myself, I got dressed and braved the slightly chilled morning air. I bundled up the papers I'd left on the chest and dashed through the misting sprinklers toward the office. Bolting up the steps, my wet boots hit the fresh paint and I skidded to a trembling stop. Shaking off as much of the damp spray as I could, I tried to wrestle my keys out of my pocket when it dawned on me I was smelling freshly brewed coffee, and the heavy wooden door was not only unlocked but swung open. The coffee smell I dismissed. The granola sisters were early risers, and the masochists who jogged before dawn usually stopped in at the shop across the street for their morning hit. But the office door was quite another matter. I dropped the folder I'd carried up from the house onto one of the Adirondack chairs, edged open the screen door, and quietly slid halfway into the office, only to find myself being stared down by a large, older black woman sitting behind her desk, her handsome, round face twisted into a skeptical frown.
"Boy, what the hell do you think you're doing? You're too old to pretend that you're a ninja."
Claudia had mastered the evil eye before I'd drawn my first breath, and she used it indiscriminately, searing the skin off my bones.
"Either get your ass in here or stay outside. You're letting all the cold air in."
"Oh, fuck no," I exhaled hotly. "You cannot be here."
"Did you just cuss at me?"
She stood up and grabbed at the cane leaning against her desk. If I wasn't careful, she was going to lay my head open with what looked like a master pimp stick from the 1920s.
"I swear I didn't just hear that. Now close the damn door."
When life hands one a fierce southern-born woman who'd whipped 8 boys into adulthood, one does what she says. Even though one's death was on the horizon, once said woman's eldest son found out she was sitting in one's office, I wouldn't admit to trembling when I retrieved the folder from the front porch, but my hands were definitely shaking from the cold. Except for the cane and a faint stiffness in her walk, my office manager looked good. Claudia came in ready for a battle. She'd obviously been to the hairdresser while she'd been off work. Her head of loose curls were now a dark sienna, without a trace of the silver hair she'd earned. Girded in a Sunday-go-to-meeting deep purple dress and black camisole, all she was missing was a horned hat and a halberd. Although, taking a good look at the heft of the cane she wielded, she could have a spear hidden inside. She toddled over to the coffee machine and refilled her cup, then carefully stirred in a packet of sugar and a dash of cream. The cane made a hard thump on the polished floor when Claudia turned back to her desk. I noticed she didn't bring me any coffee, but I wasn't going to say anything. I was too busy trying to figure out a way to call Martin and still sound like a man when I threw myself on his mercy. "Martin's going to kick my ass," I commented as I tried to casually skirt her to get to my desk. "Just so you know, when he's done with me, Jay'll get the house. He'll probably turn this place into a photography studio, but he'll need an office manager. I'll put in a good word for you. You know, probably right before I use my last breath to tell him I love him." She was about to say something, probably something strong enough to wither my manhood, when Bobby breezed through the front door. The surprised look he had on his face when he spotted Claudia was priceless. I would have laughed if I hadn't been trying to figure out the last time my will had been updated.
"Damn, Cole, Martin is gonna have your fucking balls. Yep. He's going to take him and hang him off the back of his truck hitch right after he skins you alive."
He'd brought a bag of plain bagels with cream cheese, dumping them on my desk before heading to the rapidly disappearing pot of coffee. Unlike my beloved office manager, he actually brought me a travel mug of coffee, then proceeded to make another pot so there'd be plenty on hand for my wake.
"No one is killing anyone," Claudia proclaimed loudly. "Leastways not until I finish watching that damn show Hune got me addicted to." "How did you get here? You didn't drive, right?"
I hadn't spotted her sedan outside, and then remembered the doctor had forbidden her to drive while she was convalescing.
"Shit, don't tell me you didn't have one of the kids drive you. They're too young to die." "I'll have you know, mister, I took a cab."
Claudia leaned over between our desks and stabbed me with a sharp fingernail.
"The kids can take me home this afternoon when they're done. I'll hold down the fort until then. I even brought my own lunch so I don't have to leave and go get something to eat."
"Well, how about if I drop you off before I head out to where I'm going?" I suggested. "That way I can, see if I can maybe bribe Martin with college scholarships for Mo and Sissy."
"It's a good idea,"
Bobby piped up.
"He might only, break your back then, Bane style."
"You two are chewing on my last nerve."
Her tone remained steady, but there was a thin edge to it, and I knew we were dancing on the edge of disaster.
"I was bored. At least I can be bored here without someone trying to get me to eat soup or nap. Swear to God above, you'd think I'd died and crawled back up out of the grave the way those kids are."
"That's 'cause we love you." I almost flinched when she turned in her chair, but instead of a slap across my head, I got a wistful, teary smile. "And you were shot?"
"Boy, you have more holes in you than a colander. And you're like that stupid pink bunny on batteries. I can take one."
She settled back into her chair and turned on her computer.
If I get tired, I can go catnap on that couch in the conference room. Besides, I left Martin a note. If he's got any issues, he can take them up with me.
It's good to see you. I wheeled over on my chair and gave her a kiss on the cheek. She smelled of baby powder, home, and a faint hint of violets. I kissed her again, just to see her cheeks go bright pink, and Claudia slapped my thigh, pushing me away. Her system finished loading, and I heard her gasp, catching a glimpse of what looked like a sample model for silicone implants plastered over her desktop.
How come there's a half-naked girl on my computer screen?
I didn't know how her office chair could turn around fast enough to create a cyclone, or how she could make it seem like she'd had lasers installed in her eyes during her hospital stay, but it could, and it seemed like she had.
Cole, what kind of perverted things have you been letting Mo do on my computer?
I was saved from responding by the phone. A glance at the ID screen told me all I needed to know. I grabbed a bagel, my coffee, and Bobby, headed out quickly, and let Claudia deal with the call from her oldest son. Running had served me well in the past. I wasn't going to give up a tried-and-true method of keeping my neck in one piece, especially if Claudia started talking to Martin about Mo's choice in eye candy. We'd gone 5 blocks in Bobby's truck before he asked the obvious. Sipping from his open mug of coffee, he battled through a left-lane tangle and came out the victor.
Okay, Princess, where the fuck am I going?
I thought I would see what Gyeong-si was up to today. I'd appreciated Bobby making me coffee, but it needed more sugar. I caught him up on what I'd been working on, and he grunted at the salient bits. I don't know who else I can shake out of the trees. Maybe Gyeong-si can think of someone from his past who's a crazy possessive bitch or has an insane husband?
You think he'd give a shit?
Bobby asked sarcastically.
That guy pisses me off on principle. Not just the whole pretending to be batting for our team, which is some sick shit already, but because if he does know who could be behind this crap, then why the fuck isn't he at least trying to cough up some names for the cops?
Well, he struck me as the definition of selfish, I answered. And to be honest, after my talking with O'Byrne last night, I kind of expect someone in blue to be knocking on his door.
You think he knows?
He cocked his head at me, keeping his eyes on the road. The morning traffic hadn't quite thickened to insane yet, but it was still tight in places.
About the kids he's got, I mean.
Yeah, Bach confronted him about Hong Chul. I guess he wanted to warn Gyeong-si off after Abby was born. Supposedly the guy sent Bach a letter saying he'd leave the family alone if Bach invested in his fortune-telling business here in Los Angeles. I don't know if Hong Chul's grandfather actually coughed up any cash.
How the hell does someone invest in a fortune-telling place? I mean, what's he going to pay for, crystal balls? How much fucking incense can a guy get?
Bobby snorted.
What a piece of shit.
Yep, that's pretty much what I thought, too, I agreed. So did Jay. Ichiro, too.
Speaking of Ichiro, how about if you tell me the truth about something, Princess?
Bobby curled up with a wicked smile.
How much crying are you going to be doing once I get that tasty brother of yours in bed? And how much of that is going to be the sour grapes because you wish you'd slept with me first?
Chapter 20 There were certain times when one wished they had a gun on them. Most notable of those times were being caught on the wrong side of the glass in a lion's exhibit, being trapped in an elevator during Christmas music season, and when a supposed best friend not only tells you what he wants to do with your baby brother, but suggests you join in. Luckily, he was parking in front of Gyeong-si's place, or I would have gotten us into an accident by punching him while he drove. Slamming the truck door was the closest sound I could make, next to an actual shotgun blast to Bobby's guts. It wasn't as satisfying, but still, rattling the windows gave me some satisfaction. "Not funny, dude," I told him over the roof of the truck. He smirked, and I slapped my hand on the painted metal to get his attention. "Bobby, I'm serious. Don't give him any of your shit. Just 'cause I told you he dipped his toe into the pool doesn't mean you can go take him skinny dipping."
"Shit, okay."
He held his hands up in mock surrender.
"I will not in any way hit up your sexy little brother for anything other than a smile." Promise, princess.
Just once, Bobby. Stop thinking with your dick. The last thing I wanted for Ichiro was Bobby sniffing around his ankles. I love you, man, but you're kind of a whore.
What if he approaches me first?
It was a masterful leer, suited to Bobby's craggy, handsome face. It spent a lot of time there, usually pulled out only when we caroused at clubs, bars, or the gym. Then you tell me so I can set him straight, in a manner of speaking. I went on, heavy with the sarcasm, but Bobby nodded. Now, do you want to come in with me or lurk out here like Mange from the Powerpuff Girls?
You watch the Powerpuff Girls?
He trailed after me, working toward the back of the complex, where Gyeongsi's bungalow squatted in its full rainbow-hued glory. Dude, I was laid up for months. Powerpuff Girls were safe, I warned him. Don't ever turn on Teletubbies. It'll suck you in for hours. It's worse than playing WoW. You in or out?
I'll lurk. He could dig you out and make a run for it.
Bobby's eyes widened when we turned the corner and he took in the spectrum of Gyeongsi's place.
Holy shit, that's... Wow, what's the inside like?
Calmer. He went for the peaceful Zen spa look inside. The stairs creaked a bit under our feet, and the flyers and pamphlets by the door were organized neatly. A few spots of neon next to buttery pastels. A breeze picked up the ends of the chimes, trilling harpsichord-like tones over us when we approached the door. If he comes outside, just, you know, try not to look directly at him. I think he's a hugger. I went in, leaving Bobby outside on the porch. The front room was empty of people. Terry wasn't in, but the pack of cigarettes on his desk was the same brand I'd seen him with before. A nearly empty plastic cup of iced tea or coffee sat sentinel near a pile of papers, meant he'd probably stepped out for something. Either that or he'd thrown in the towel that morning and stomped out without his caffeine and smokes. There was a shuffling coming from down the hall, and then Gyeongsi emerged from behind the beaded curtain, throwing it back like a fake wizard failing to intimidate a little girl and her dog. When he spotted me, standing in the front room, his first reaction was to utter a heartfelt, "Shit." Whatever Gyeongsi had been up to over the past few days, it had eaten him alive. The flamboyant counselor was gone, and in his place was an old man who looked like he'd fought a homeless bum for the stained, dull blue tracksuit he was wearing. There was no trace of the finely applied makeup he'd worn the last time I'd seen him, and in the harsh daylight, every small crater and line on his face stood up and shouted for attention. A scraggly, graying stubble started someplace on his chin and worked its way up to his jaw to wrap around the back of his head. Spotty patches hopscotched along the top of his skull, turning his dome into a monochromatic knockoff of Twister. The only spots of bright color on him were the fire engine red Crocs he wore over a pair of dirty white socks. He also smelled, like a 15-day-old gym sock left in a closed-up wet locker reek. "You!" His lips peeled back, and I inhaled a whiff of cheap alcohol on his breath. Gyeongsi reached for me and slapped his hands on my chest. He couldn't get his feet under him, and he tilted, skewing off balance. "Get out of—" I caught him before he stumbled to the floor. He must have been close to 300 pounds of drunken pain because my arms strained under his nearly dead weight. Close up, he reeked even nearer to high heaven than a 6-week-old dumpster of trash left out during a heat wave. Sharp bites of pain erupted along my side and across my shoulder, and I must have squealed because Bobby was through the door before I had the chance to dump Gyeongsi on the carpet. He hesitated at helping me when he caught wind of the man's odor. "Dude, grab his arm!" I hissed. Gyeongsi twisted, his eyes rolling back far enough I could see their whites. He gurgled, and I began to worry he was either having a fit or was about to toss his stomach out. "Help me get him to the back, at least." Bobby ducked down and hoisted most of Gyeongsi's weight onto his shoulder.
Grab that curtain out of the way. Show me the way to the bathroom. Maybe we can dump him in a hot shower.
Dude, I don't think a volcano is going to be hot enough to burn the stink off him, I muttered, but I held the beads back so Bobby wouldn't get tangled up in them. Young C's foot wasn't as lucky, and his ankle got caught, dragging a few strands down when Bobby moved forward.
Not Mardi Gras, Bobby grumbled. Get those off of him.
Well, stop fucking moving, then, I muttered back. After loosening the strings from Gyung Si's leg, I tossed them aside and followed Bobby's staggering progress down the hallway. Go straight. I think he lives in the back. We found the bathroom. A fairly large, retro-styled space with a shower big enough for us to toss Gyung Si in on his ass and turn the water on. Bobby sniffed at his hands and headed for the sink and stole some of the hot water supply to wash up. Young C came to life after a full minute of being under the spray. Sputtering, he flung his arms about, slamming into the glass walls, and from the way he was yelling and pounding, I was halfway afraid he would break through the shower enclosure. Bobby finished drying his hands with a hand towel embroidered with pink seashells and tossed it onto the closed toilet seat.
That's your mess there, princess.
He jerked his thumb at the floundering Young C.
I'll be outside. Maybe I can catch a game on that TV in the front office.
Really? Fuck it. I was already talking to Bobby's back, and I opened the shower door, rolling up my sleeves in preparation for battle. Drawing the line at Gyung Si's pouchy briefs, I got him mostly stripped, then worked some of the stench off his skin with soap and a rough scrub cloth. I left him under the pounding water to find him something clean to wear. It took me a few minutes to go through the carnage of his studio apartment, but eventually I found another tracksuit, a green and orange monstrosity, left in the dryer. After digging out a pair of clean underwear from the wrinkled laundry in the dryer drum, I returned to find Gyung Si precariously balanced on the toilet. He'd gotten one leg out of his briefs, and I was hailed with a full view of his shriveled cock and balls when he spread his thighs to get the other side off. Oh, Jesus Christ. I held the tracksuit up to block my view. Turning my head, I tossed the clothes in his general direction, not caring if they landed in the puddles of water he'd managed to track all over the black and white hexagon-tiled floors. Get dressed. I'll see if I can find some coffee in this shithole you live in. He took long enough in the bathroom that I was not only able to start a pot of coffee, but also dig out the living room area. I tossed an armload of clothes into the wash, measured out soap, and began a holy reckoning on the sweat and beer-soaked fabrics. Collecting the various bottles and trash around the place took me another few minutes, but by the time I was done, I could more than likely sit on the couch without either catching a disease or getting pregnant, and the soured onion smell of unwashed man had faded from the air a bit. Thankfully, Gyung Si hadn't found the Crocs again, or I would have beaten him with one of them. Despite the soaking, he was bleary-eyed and worn when he sank down onto the futon next to me and picked up the cup of hot coffee I'd left for him on the table. He hadn't shaved, and the scruff on his head sparkled in places where he'd missed it with the towel. At least he smelled better. I let him drink a few sips of the coffee before I started in on him. Okay, let's talk about why you tried to kill me with your stench.
You told me you were a cop. Then I find out that bitch sent you to spy on me.
It was a bitterly flung accusation, and one I easily punted back to him.
But then the real cops came by. That's when they told me about my daughter.
Vivian, that daughter?
So you knew? He said accusingly. Did she tell you about her? Park Hyuna-sun. She told you before the cops told me?
Probably only by a few hours, if that, I replied, leaving off the details of being with Vivian when she died. It was Madam Sun who needed that comfort. I wasn't sure how much of Gyung Si's tears were as crocodile as his shoes.
Then you came here to what? Gloat?
No. I came here to ask you who else you got pregnant, if you even kept track. Hong Chul's grandfather, Buck Bong Cho, kept some records of other women you slept with.
Ask anyone. That Buck Bung-to was crazy.
Kyung-si twirled his finger by his temple.
He would stand out in the middle of the road, wearing only his underwear, and scream at the cars parked too close to his house.
While I might have agreed, a little bit, with Kyung-si after reading some of Buck's notes, that wasn't going to get me anywhere. Look, I already know about Yun-Jun Lee. Can you think of anyone who might have wanted to hurt you by killing Vivian? Maybe one of those women, or their husbands?
Yun-Jun Lee? What are you talking about?
Kyung-si spluttered, flicking coffee drops from his fleshy lips.
I had nothing to do with Yuna-san's daughter because I didn't know. Not until the police told me. If I'd known. But that doesn't matter either. It's too late. What does it even matter?
Because last night, someone tried to kill Park Hong-chul's little girl, and I think that person is trying to lash out at you. My words seemed to shock Kyung-si, and what little color he had left in his face drained out, leaving him waxen. From the red splotches and broken veins on his cheek, his most recent drinking binge had not been his first. His hands shook, and I took the mug from him and set it down on the table before he upended its contents on the floor.
I didn't know,
he stuttered.
I don't know who would do that. When the police came here, they wanted to talk to me about Vivian, and they said they would be investigating me, because I'm having sex with my clients, but I told them I am not.
Isn't that what happened in South Korea? Isn't that why you left? Because that's what Buck suspected, and that there were too many women you'd violated, and you were chased out.
I violated no one.
His Korean slipped over his words, blurring their edges.
The women I had sex with back home, you don't understand what I...
Okay, why don't you tell me? I angled myself on the couch to face him. Tell me what's going on, and maybe I can figure out who's trying to kill the people connected to you. Let's start off with Mae Choi. You knew her, didn't you? Was she your niece or another daughter?
She was my cousin. My father's sister's girl,
he mumbled.
I never met her. I promise I tried to talk to her when she moved here, but Mae wouldn't meet me. I am dead to my family. That's why I told you I didn't know her. Even to someone that young, I'm nothing.
Because you pretend you're gay? Why didn't you tell them the truth?
Pretend?
Kyung-si's fleshy waddle flapped when he shook his head.
I'm not pretending.
He caught my sidelong glance and cleared his throat. Noisily.
Yes, I act more colorful when I'm with a client, but that's to put them at ease. Most of my customers are women, and it makes them feel safe. Korean women, more traditional women, are uncomfortable if left alone with a man. If they think of me as harmless, they will do business with me. I have to make a living.
I didn't know what to say to that. I honestly didn't know how to feel about how a man portrayed himself in order to gain business, or even if I was qualified to judge. Even though I knew I couldn't live a lie on the scale Kyung-si did, neither could I condemn him for making that choice. In some way, he was doing what Jae did, covering up who he was in order to survive.
I left Seoul because I couldn't live as a man there, the kind of man my family wanted me to be.
The broken look I'd seen on my lover's face was mirrored in Kyung-si's expression.
I tried. There wasn't a woman around me I didn't try to seduce, but even as I had sex with them, I knew it wasn't what I wanted, what I needed. I left to come here because I thought I would be free, but instead, I'm still living in a world of lies. They are just different lies.
Couldn't you just be who you are? I saw the answer in his eyes before the question was even fully out of my mouth. It was the same question I had posed to Jae, time and time again. While I believed life would be easier if he and Kyung-si were honest with themselves, I knew that wasn't the case. Okay, what about Yun-Jun Lee? She was pregnant when she was killed. You telling me that baby wasn't yours?
I haven't touched a woman since I left Korea.
His insistence was hot and furious.
I counseled Eunjun Lee because she and her husband wanted children, but they were unsuccessful.
So this was a miracle birth?
No. She had an affair,
Kyung-si muttered under his breath.
I told her not to. I told her what it is like to live a lie, but she wanted a child, and, well, she was not getting any younger. She slept with a man she met at church. Eunjun wanted to give her husband a child. I told her it was wrong of her to cheat on him when there are other ways to get a child.
Is that what you fought about that day, the day she was killed?
Yes.
The wattle shook vigorously this time.
I told her she had to tell her husband the truth or...
Or? I pressed.
Or I would tell him.
He dropped his gaze to the floor, turning his face away from me.
It was my fault she left early. If I'd only spoken to her more calmly, Eunjun would have seen reason and those men wouldn't have been there when she returned home. It is my fault she's dead, both Eunjun and her baby.
What about in Korea, when you slept with her there? Buck wrote that she got pregnant then, too. What happened to the baby?
I never slept with Eunjun. Not here, not in Korea,
Kyung-si protested.
She became my client here. I knew her mother. She came by to visit, and I gave her a reading for free, only because of our connection. She liked what I had to say and became a client, but there was nothing between us beyond that.
I wasn't sure if I believed him, but I was going off of the words from a dead man. I didn't know Bak Bong-chol's state of mind when he wrote down his suspicions. There was a distinct possibility he'd been driven more by outrage and revenge than anything else. Kyung-si's hurt was palpable. I was going to have to readjust my opinion of the man blubbering on the couch. Who besides the family knew Hong-chul was your son? I shifted gears, hoping to find something to chase down. From what I could see, Kyung-si truly was broken up by the women's deaths and Abby's stabbing. If the murders were connected to him, I was going to worry about his mental health. Already unstable from alcohol abuse, he didn't look like he could take much more. Who is there out there who wants to hurt you?
I don't know.
Kyung-si burst his mouth in thought.
I would have said son, but she never would have killed her own daughter. I was surprised she gave Vivian away. That doesn't sound like her.
What happened between you two? Could this be connected to her husband? Maybe someone from her past? Do you know?
Her husband was a friend of mine.
He picked up his coffee again. His hands were steadier this time, and he cupped the mug tightly.
She and I were both students when we made Vivian. I was trying so hard to be normal. We got drunk one night after a session with our Sunbae, and we found ourselves in a private room. I didn't think about her husband, my friend, instead. All I could think of was trying to be a real man. I didn't know she got pregnant, and then I didn't know about Hong Cho either. Not until Bak Bong Cho told me later. If I'd known, I would have happily married Hong Cho's mother. It would have made my family very happy.
You did try to extort money from him after Abby was born, I pointed out.
That Bak Bong Cho, he was an angry old man,
Kyung-si scoffed.
Bak tried to give me money to leave Los Angeles because he didn't want me around either my son or my granddaughter. I'd already told him I would not interfere in Hong Cho's life. He already had a good father. What would he want with someone like me? I told Bak if he wanted to give me money, he could invest it in my business because I wasn't going anywhere.
Jesus, this is a mess. If Kyung-si was to be believed, I was back to where I started, spinning my wheels and chasing ghosts. Did Bak talk to you about any of the other women who had your kids? Well, except for Madame Sun. I know he didn't tell you about Vivian. What about Eunjun Lee? Why did he think you got her pregnant in Korea?
I don't know. I didn't know her then.
Kyung-si chewed on his fingernail, thinking on something.
Wait, was he thinking about Jun Yun Yi? She was the only other woman I slept with besides Sun and Hong Cho's mother. We were lovers for about 5 months, right before I left. She wouldn't accept that I changed at first, but eventually she was fine with it, I think. I don't know. I haven't seen her in years.
So she's been in contact with you? The name was familiar, but to be honest, most of the Korean names I'd come across sometimes blurred together.
Terry, my assistant, is her son. It's why I hired him. She asked me to give him a job.
He rubbed at his face.
I'm tired. I don't know how much more I can help you.
Wait, Terry's mother? I suddenly remembered where I'd heard the name before. It was the name of the woman who'd spoken to me outside of Yun Jun's apartment. Does she live next to the Lees, next door?
Yes.
Gyeongsi nodded slowly. It struck me the man never looked outside of himself and his needs. If he had, he would have realized what was just dawning on me. But Terry's last name is Yi, I pointed out. While Korean women might keep their last name, their children were named after their father. Terry's name shouldn't have been Yi. Why doesn't he have his father's name?
I don't know.
He scraped at his beard with his fingers.
Maybe she married someone with the same last name, as Yun Jun did. Do you know how many people are named Yi? I never thought about it. I only hired him because she called me up and asked me to give him a job. He complains a lot. Not my type. I like my men to be more like you.
I knew when Gyeongsi set up shop in Los Angeles, Terry was maybe at most a year younger than Vivian or Hong Chul. After doing a quick round of math, I shook my head at the man's obtuseness. Gyeongsi, think about it. Terry isn't just your assistant. He's your son. Chapter 21. Son of a bitch. I slapped at the dashboard of Bobby's truck. We read the name wrong. She even told me people got their names confused.
Yeah, you said that already.
He hit me lightly with his fist.
Stop beating up my truck, asshole, and tell me where we're going.
It was early enough in the day, and I wanted to talk to Jun Yun Yi again. If someone was stalking Gyeongsi's past conquests, she was going to be on the killer's list. Bobby was easily persuaded to come with me. The promise of a cold beer and a hot hamburger went a long way in compromising any plans he might have had for the day. Right after his dick, his stomach pretty much ruled the roost. I'd pay for feeding him the burger and beer with a run around Los Angeles, or going a few rounds in the ring, but it was a small price to pay. I would see how I felt about making that deal later, when I was licking my wounds under a hot shower. The main street fronting the complex was eerily quiet. Like most L.A. streets, all of the parking spaces were taken, including the half-space people usually left behind a red zone, but no one was out walking. After Bobby drove up the street for the second time, I directed him to the small parking lot behind the apartments. He pulled into a space directly below the Lee's balcony and gave me the evil eye.
"If I get towed, you're going to be paying for it,"
he barked at me. "You're not going to get towed." Looking around the lot, I gestured wildly. "There's like three cars here. By the time someone wants this space, we'll be long gone."
"Shitty things happen to my trucks when I'm with you,"
Bobby continued to grumble as we walked to the pass-through leading to the complex's courtyard.
"I should be happy if all that happens to this one is it's getting towed."
"One truck gets blown up and it's all my fault? One." Pointing out the obvious, that I had not been the one to blow his truck up, had no lasting effect on Bobby. His derision continued when we found the passage to the courtyard blocked by a locked security gate. Someone was certainly serious about keeping out the riffraff. Grabbing the heavy chain wrapped around the door handles, he rattled the padlock to see if it could be opened. Much like Bobby's mind about my involvement in his dead truck's demise, the gate remained closed. Okay, so we walk around, I said to Bobby's disgusted hiss. Come on, it'll help you work off that burger I'm going to buy you. Not much had changed in the complex since I had last been there.
The trees were still tall and bushy, their tops reaching the upper floor roof, and the courtyard resembled an ancient rainforest. Someone had gone wild with the fertilizer, because a pungent, organic fishy smell hit us in the face once we got past the front archway. The patches of lawn interspersed between the flower beds glistened from dew, and a butterfly dive-bombed my face when I stepped out into the dappled rays coming through the trees. Despite the cloudless sky, the morning was still bitter, and the wind whistling through the archway and pass-through door cut down to the bone.
This is kind of nice,
Bobby murmured, looking around. Cocking his head, he frowned.
And kind of too, quiet. No toys or anything on the walkways. What, mostly adults?
I think most of the people who live here, either are retired or work during the day. Kind of feels like one of those places. I pointed to the stairs near the pass-through to the parking lot. That's the only way up. Yi said she has the place next to the Lees. Let's see if she's home. He sidestepped a sprinkler head that had popped up suddenly. A few feet down, the dirt beside the sidewalk sprouted a row of black spigots.
Those things better not go off. These are new boots. What exactly are you hoping to get from her?
Stop worrying about your delicate feet. He slapped my back with the flat of his hand, and I reached back to rub at the sting. And I don't know. Maybe she knows someone who wanted Gyeongsi to suffer? They were close, and he seems kind of self-absorbed.
Kind of?
Yeah, okay, very, I corrected myself. She's one of those women who collects gossip. If there's dirt on someone, I think she might have it, especially if it's about Gyeongsi. I'm hoping she knows about someone like that, or at least we can warn her to go to the cops if someone suspicious comes around. The sprinklers went off full blast before I could go any further. The water was fucking cold and for some reason shot out in hard pounding sheets. Dodging against the outside wall of the apartments didn't do us any good. The blasts of water coming from the popped up heads were like being bombarded by fire hoses. I felt the sting of the blast through my jeans and tried to skip out of the way, only to fall prey to the next shot arching toward my crotch.
Oh, shit. Head toward the stairs, kid.
Bobby took a shot of water to his chest. The water continued to ratchet upward, leaving welts on his cheek and jaw.
What the fuck is...
We never made it to the stairs. A shot came out of the shadows above us, scoring a groove into the cement by our feet. Another followed, then, like the sprinklers, a line of blasts cut us off from the archway. Braving the beating lines of water, Bobby and I dove toward the center of the courtyard, both of us looking for cover among the tree trunks. Cowering behind one of the smaller palms, I pressed my back to the striated trunk and looked around for any sign of the shooter, catching the last bit of a water stream on my shoulder. Bobby somehow ended up farther in, a few feet away, behind a eucalyptus.
Can you see him?
Bobby shouted above the chunking sound of the sprinklers and loud gushes of water. I shook my head, and he bared his teeth in frustration.
Tell me you brought your gun!
Shaking my head so the shooter couldn't hear my response, I grumbled to myself. Who the fuck would bring a gun to a fortune teller? I dug my phone out of my pocket and sighed at its flickering screen. Soaked down to the chips, the screenshot I'd taken of Nico for my background glowed a demonic red before being cut through with blue dots and lines. Holding my phone up for Bobby to see, I lifted my eyebrows and pointed at him, asking if his was any better. His mouth turned into a sour fish kiss, and he shook his head, then pointed back toward the parking lot. Really? I grumbled over the water noise. You fucking leave your phone behind and you give me shit about a gun? He shrugged and took a peek out from behind his tree. Our gunman must have had a better view of Bobby's hiding place because the second his face popped out from behind the trunk, another shot went off and pieces of papery bark flew into the air. We were a lot closer to the back of the complex than the front. Making it to the stairs would be tricky, especially since I couldn't guarantee we could get to the shooter before he cut into us. From the looks of things, the first floor was either deserted or filled with people with more common sense than Bobby and I had. The water pouring out of the sprinklers was freezing, and I shivered, feeling a ripple of ice starting to kiss my blood. Rubbing at my shoulder to get my circulation going, I took another look around the trunk, trying to spot a way to safety. Short of getting inside one of the lower